Hey, we're Yakul, and you're listening in time.
That's
Fuck me,
perfect.
I've been saying it wrong this whole time. I've been saying
Yakul.
Yakul. Is it
You can say it however you like. We're not prejudiced,
Oh,
but I
see,
mean, yeah, that's how we
all
say
right.
it.
Yeah, we'll just let's go then. Guys, welcome back. We're joined today by Yakul or Yakul, depending on however you want to say it. How are you guys doing?
Just forging the path there with the Yakul.
What have you guys been up to?
We've been good. Just been focusing loads on writing and loads of just like being in the studio and stuff, which has actually been it's been pretty sick. We've enjoyed the last few months in that sense, but definitely been missing the shows. Definitely been missing the shows.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you said you had a gig in a few weeks. That's not looking like it's going to happen, unfortunately.
Definitely not. Yeah. It's kind of stressful that it hasn't been cancelled. When no one's,
Yeah,
I mean.
I mean, it would have been a
Gonna get
such
there,
a
like, where are you?
yeah, exactly. It's such a stacked lineup as well. I mean, Odd Soul are great, and obviously you guys are awesome. That would have been
Yeah,
such a good
man.
show.
Hopefully, we'll be able to reschedule for a time that is when everything is like, I don't know, in 2022 or some
2022,
shit.
yeah.
Yeah. I think I just saw it on Twitter. Like it said, like the whole world, like you know, as in like the entire population probably won't receive it until like 2024. So like I don't know, maybe everyone should start thinking of a different career path.
Yeah, let's just end it there. Let's
I mean, what has anyone got any other like skills that you can, you know, apply outside of music? Is there a plan B?
Nah, that was the whole point I think of doing music was to like not have a plan B, just so you'd like
Exactly,
have to succeed. But I
yeah,
mean,
man.
it's probably beneficial that they're gonna take their time with a vaccine. I'm not really into them just like giving it to the whole
Yeah, I don't
world.
want to be the
Then a
first
year
guy.
later, everyone just turns into like Cronenbergs, like in Rick and Morty, and just who knows?
Yeah, no, I don't want to be the first guy in the queue to get a jab, I'll be honest. I'm not like an anti-vaxxer, but you know.
Oh
God,
God,
no,
not. Yeah,
not at all.
let's
Not at
just
all.
make sure
Yeah.
that's not misconstrued.
Yeah. I mean, that's our first clip sorted.
Yakul cool, or anti-vaxxers. They
Yeah,
said
just to put a statement
coronavirus is
down
a
that
myth.
we don't think that Bill Gates is trying to control the world with a vaccine. That is not our vibe.
In Birmingham, they started setting 5G towers on fire. I don't know if you saw that,
Really?
because they blamed it on a coronavirus, didn't they?
Yeah. Oh
And
my God. Oh my God.
yeah, it's the funniest shit
Nuts.
going.
I watched this video of this guy who I don't know when like it actually came out, but I remember watching the video like at the start of lockdown, and this guy pretending to be like an engineer for a 5G tower, and he's got this thing which he's saying is the part to put into it, and he just shows you that what he's done. He's just like got these like little like plastic stickers thing and put COV-19 on it, and he's like just pretending to be an engineer, and he's like, look, it's got COV-19 written here. What's that about?
Oh, it's
And
ridiculous.
like
Yeah,
it was
there's been.
posted on like Fox News and stuff, like
Oh, it's
everyone's
like was it on BBC News like years ago when they said if you stick a bunch of monkeys in a room and like put them in front of typewriters, they'll type out the whole of Shakespeare or some shit. It must be like something like that. Like, come on, man, there's the odds are there that it could still say COVID-19.
Maybe, yeah. Sooner or later.
Yeah, and it's like you see that there was protests. Was it last week in Berlin about the whole Bill
Yeah, the
Gates thing
anti.
and the coronavirus thing? They said it was something like 1.3 million turnout, and then if you look at the pictures, it's just quite clearly not enough to fill like the O2 Academy.
Oh man, it's so easy to just like make it seem like there's so many more people, like Donald Trump being the
Oh,
perfect.
his
But
inauguration speech, whatever.
yeah, the biggest
That
it's
was.
ever been.
I guess
That was a.
that's kind of like I wanted to ask you this at some point. Obviously on Spotify, you guys are rocking some pretty big numbers now. I think it's around the 115,000 mark. I mean, out my window, I can see Wembley Stadium. How does it feel knowing that you have more than enough people to fill Wembley
I
Stadium
mean,
listening to your
we're
music?
gonna put on a show there straight away. That's our first show back in Wembley. Sell
You'll have to
out.
pay for everyone's tickets from around the world just to like fill it. It'd be sweet though.
Luckily, we got the money to do that, you know.
That's sweet.
So much money, man.
So much
That
money.
streaming money is huge.
That's streaming money, and you guys are independent artists, aren't you?
Yeah.
Independent is the way forward, guys. You heard it here.
Absolutely, man. Yeah.
I mean, it must be pretty cool though, knowing that there's that many people checking out the stuff.
It's cool, man, and like especially like over like lockdown the past like 6 months, having being able to kind of like grow online without the need for having shows, especially for like a band like us, live is like the main thing. That's kind of everything. That's where we grow. That's like, we're a live band really, like so yeah, to not have any shows is like really tricky, but it's been cool to get the support from Spotify to be able to kind of like grow. I mean,
you guys have been active as well over quarantine. Like, I think, did you record all, like, you released like 4 or 5 songs now?
Yeah, we were really lucky that we'd recorded like drums to like 6 tunes at the end of last
like pretty
year.
Much everything else
exactly we had done pretty much well. Everything done. It's just so been lucky. Sitting on these tunes all year.
That's perfect.
Ready to like drip feed. We had different release plans that kind of changed as the year went on, and we realized that it wasn't such a good plan to do it in the way we had done it.
But you adapted, right? And like, yeah, I think they've all been quite successful with all the songs.
Yeah, man.
You got any personal favorites from?
I think our favorite is probably the one that just came out, In the Air. Which, In the Air. Just I don't know. Like, it's really interesting. We were chatting about this a bit the last few days. Like, well, so far that one is not like hit the ground running as much as the other ones. It might in time, but like, what's interesting is that like, the idea that you have before it comes out of what you think is going to do the best is like quite commonly not the one that actually does well. So yeah, it's interesting. I mean, it kind of just shows you that like, you don't always know what is going to connect with people the best.
Is there any song in particular that you didn't think was going to connect but absolutely banged?
North and South, I expected, South, was probably not, because it's pretty weird, and it came after Company, which is like pretty straight compared to like everything else we've released. And I know that we were kind of like more confident that that one was going to do well because it was a like 2.5 minute song, like a bit more like commercialized compared to like at least some of our other stuff. And then we followed it with like pretty weird song that's like quite a bit longer and has like long instrumental sections and stuff, but like, yeah, so that was kind of surprising, but I'm glad that people kind of got that one and got into it.
Yeah, for sure. Go on, mate.
Yeah, North and South's a perfect example of just like using space and time for like effect. Gives it so much impact.
Yeah, we love doing like really long extended sciences. Yeah. Rinse that out quite a bit.
How does that work out live?
Looks around.
North and South is actually, we've only done that one like a couple times live, and that is horrible. It's so stressful because like all the other songs that we do stops, it's like, I don't know, there's a short enough length that like we all know that we're going to come back in, but North and South has like 2 bars of silence at some point, and it's just like,
yeah, it's,
I have to just do a little cheeky look around. We've been saying that I should get like wing mirrors on my keyboard so I can see stuff. But yeah, like, yeah, it's fun. It's fun doing that on live still, for sure. Hopefully we'll be able to.
You ever had any of those moments live where someone was slightly out and it's noticeable? Yeah. Really?
Yeah, it's never been like...
I remember on that, the last show we did last year, which was the last show we did. I think we started a song again because I fucked it up, and then I fucked it up again.
Wait, what?
It was blossoming in the end. He said, should we do that again, Tom? And then I did it wrong again.
Wait. What? A comedian?
It was in Brighton, yeah.
Nah, I don't remember that.
I remember that. I remember it very well.
No, I saw... Oh, wait.
I did.
All right, well, I don't remember it. So either.
I don't think people mind very much. Everyone laughed, so.
I think that's the thing, though, when you're performing, like, only you are really super aware of everything
exactly
that goes wrong, right?
You've got to just give yourself a break and realize that it's just live music. Like, things like that happen. It doesn't matter. Nobody was like, I'm leaving.
This is not what I paid for.
Yeah, you know, it's fine. It's just it is what it is.
Yeah, I think we had Adam Neely on a few weeks ago, and he mentioned we spoke to him about repetition legitimizers, and that's pretty much it. You mentioned you made the mistake and you made it again. I was like, well, people probably noticed less so then.
Yeah, if he hadn't turned around and said let's do it again, then no, everyone would have thought I was sick as
well. It's what it was meant to be. Yeah, that is true. Like, it's something that's quite hard to do when you're performing, but like, it's something that you have to learn, which is to just not like show when you've made the mistakes. But it's so easy.
I remember, like, when I was young, I used to just like make a face and
you'd go like,
oh,
ooh,
no, and then you do it 100 times and you're like, nobody cares. No, just one carry on and smile, like, it's fine.
I mean, with the like future soul jazz scene, all of that, like as soon as you make that face, people will be like, oh, he's got a stank face on. He's really into it now.
Yeah. It's interesting how the stank face and being disgusted by something are like the identical face. Like,
yeah.
So
it should be a meme about it.
It must be. I mean, I can't make my mouth go down, which is really sad. I can't do like that. My mouth just, I just don't seem to have muscles. I'm just too, maybe I'm just too smiley all the time. I can't do it.
It's weird, man.
Yeah, I know.
I guess, I mean, I don't know if you guys are familiar with JD Beck.
Yeah, yeah.
We've got JD coming on tomorrow.
There's a video really?
Yeah, JD, we've got Domi and JD. Can't wait.
Yeah, that's so dope.
So he did a video for Zildjian Live, and there's like the whole audience is for the whole 10 minutes just like disgusted by how good it is. But it kind of, you know, in this scene, in this genre, that kind of legitimizes the music as good. If you see someone doing that face, it's good.
That's it, you're in.
It's uncontrollable as well, isn't it? It's like,
yeah, man,
you can't like not do it.
It's a reflex.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
what's weird is it like, yeah, it's something that kind of grows over time. Like I remember when like I didn't have as good an understanding of harmony, something like that wouldn't jump out at me and get me excited. But now, yeah, there's just like certain movements within harmony that I just like go like, I just gotta make a sound. Like, yeah, I'm like, yes, comes out.
I did that with one of your songs. You do like the melody, you move up like a tritone. What's the name of the song now? It's not Company, is it? Is it North and South? No, it's not North and South either. I'll get back to you in a second.
Yeah, I'm very intrigued. That's good, man. I'm glad that's pretty much one of the main things we want.
But this is another, I suppose, question about the band even. Yakko, how'd the name come about? Because you're sort of instantly competing with a big popular yogurt company.
That was it. We just wanted to
just be really stoked on that drink.
Just wanted to challenge.
Get that sponsorship.
That's all we're looking for, really. Or a cease and desist letter or something.
Yeah.
We made t-shirts that were so terrible, but I don't know why we did it. We made t-shirts that just, it would be funny if we were like really big, but maybe we'll have them again later down the line. It was just the Yakult logo without the T. But like,
they did not sell well.
They did not sell very well. I mean, they were terribly made, and it was like, I don't know, but yeah, it was, we kind of were hoping that they'd get to a point where we'd get like a cease and desist letter from Yakult. That was the aim.
It didn't happen.
Yeah, I mean, any publicity is good publicity.
Exactly, right. You know what I mean? But no, the real way we got our name was that we're just fans of Studio Ghibli films, and that is the name of this really cool
Red
stag
elk
thing in Princess Mononoke, which is a great movie, and highly recommend it.
Yeah, that is it. We've had like quite a few people DM us like, over the last couple of years asking if that's where it's from. So yeah, any studio. I know it's Ghibli, but I'm going to keep saying Ghibli because I'm too used to saying Ghibli. Yeah. I can't change it now.
This is the first time I've heard it called Ghibli as well.
That's the correct way.
I probably pronounced it wrong as well. It's probably something.
No, it sounds more correct.
That is it because like when I was in Japan, they were like,
when did you go to Japan?
I was there at the end of last year. I was doing this tour with Incognito. Not with Yakko. I was just like, I've been doing some writing and stuff with Bluey, and he just got me on tour for like doing some BBs and just play some keys and stuff. But it was a really sick experience. We did like 5 or 6 nights in a row, Blue Night in Tokyo, and
it's beautiful, isn't it, Tokyo?
Yeah. Such a cool city. But
it's the one place I want to go back to. It's
man.
It's Do you ever go to any of the arcades and that?
We went around Roppongi.
Yeah, Roppongi.
And what's that shop that's open all the time that has just everything in it? Always forget its name. Oh man, all the places are just like going.
What, the big superstore or something?
Yeah, is it in man, I can't remember.
I went 12 years ago when I was, but. A wee man traveling.
You've got a good reason to
remember anything about it other than I had the best time ever. It was sick.
I mean, 12 years is a long time. I was there like less than a year ago. I should remember.
You should really remember. That's pretty bad.
because I've just been in one room for like 6 months. I can't remember anything about anywhere else. All geography has gone out the window.
Where did you, so did you mention you went traveling? Where did you go traveling?
I just did Japan.
Right.
I dropped out of uni, and I didn't know what to do, so I just went and visited my mate that lived out there. I did like a good long while, traveled around everywhere. It's sick. Got on a bullet train everywhere. It's the best time.
Bullet train's the best.
So cool, and you can just—we just slept on it all the time because we didn't have any money to sleep anywhere, and it's so nice on there. We just go from one end to, because we had the unlimited thing.
Instead of staying somewhere, you just
went up and down on them. But it's sick. It's air conditioned.
It's expensive. You might as well sleep on it. It's like
we had the unlimited ticket, so we were just like bang, bang, bang.
That's
bang,
so bang, sick.
Yeah, it's got leg space as well.
We went in like summer, which was stupid. It was so humid.
Oh man, it was hot in the. I took a massive jacket.
Dying. I was carrying my big traveling backpack. I was just like sweating out everywhere.
Everyone said it was going to be really cold. I was there in December and it was like 18 degrees one day. I don't know why it was so hot, but yeah, that's a really good idea. There's something nice about sleeping when you're like moving. I'm really into it. I can't sleep in public. Really?
No way, man. No. Sorry, that's harsh.
Oh, that is very unfortunate.
Too self-aware.
You need to get like a big helmet or something.
I don't know. Like, what if someone attacks me? I'm just like, I'm ready to go. Just I think you guys are done out here. But...
I mean, you're probably gonna win out in the situation. Like,
imprisoned or something.
You can just be like Indiana Jones does it. He just puts his hat over his head. And he goes to sleep and he's ready. The moment someone comes, he's like, he's ready to go.
Oh shit, yeah. That's what I'm gonna do. something where myself and Joe were talking about. I don't know how you guys would take this actually. When we were just like, we were listening to your music for the past few weeks. And the way we sort of put it was, this is like British Charlie Puth if he didn't chase the money. what do you think of that?
I mean, like, now I know like a little more about Charlie Puth, that he has perfect pitch and kind of like has like that bit of that jazz harmony understanding. If I didn't have that information, I'd probably be really offended by that.
We meant that as a complete compliment. We love Charlie Puth. We don't like his music, but we love what he can do.
What I think the cool thing about that is, like, I guess a point that you're making in there is there's like a commerciality of it, which is something that to some degree, like, we've never tried to do that, but I think that's we do weird stuff, but one of the things that I know we all are really into is like good songs and like good melodies and stuff, so we're really into like very like some really weird music and like dense harmony, but when it's at the detriment of the song as a whole, like, I don't see the point in it. I think it's got to be like, there's got to be a song regardless.
Yeah, melody's got to be central.
Melody is king.
Yeah, I mean the songs are accessible, yet they're still rich with, you know, wacky harmonic ideas and wacky rhythms and cool pauses and things like that. So you've kind of got that perfect balance.
Thank you. Yeah, that's the aim. I think one of the things that we've definitely found over the years is like being on the verges of a few different scenes, so like that classic thing of being like too jazz for like the pop world and too pop for the jazz world, and like just kind of being like on the fringes, so like it's
that's not very helpful, that actually, it must be said. It's kind of hard to like, because when we get put on jazz bills, it's kind of just like
finding
the same thing with like loads of, we were just on like a straight up R&B night, it's still a bit weird,
a bit too west, but I mean
it's what we want to do, so it's not going to change, but like it is
for like support tours, we've I think also because we're like, especially the live show, it's really loud, and a lot of the people in the more like UK jazz world are like, it's not as rowdy, or like there's not as many like big synths and stuff, so like, when you're looking for a band to support you on like a run of shows, generally you're not gonna look for a band that's like louder than you. I don't know, it kind of depends, I guess, but like so we're still like, I guess, finding like the best avenues to take in that respect, but I mean, I'd rather be kind of making the stuff that feels like right for us than kind of like pandering to fit whatever route kind of works.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, where did this, like, obviously you mentioned earlier about when you finally, you know, had a better knowledge of harmony, that you could hear these things and you'd be like, oh yeah, that's different. Where did that come from, and where did you first, like, discover this, the love of more extended harmony?
For me, it came from wanting to be a better producer and, like, play better chords. So I think it was kind of the same. It was like when James Blake was coming out, and, like, really early Disclosure, like before they did any albums, like that era of music, that kind of, like, future garage post dubstep era, those are the terms, like, even though I don't think it was like either of those things really.
It's not.
But yeah, that kind of era, because especially, yeah, like James Blake just had all these, like, really interesting harmony, but it was, like, really produced, and, like, I was kind of producing, like, similar kind of stuff at the time, but, like, I didn't have any of the harmony knowledge. I'd just sit at a keyboard and just kind of, like, play notes until I found something that works, and I was like, this is long, there's got to be a quicker way. And then realized from getting into playing piano more again, which I hadn't played in quite a few years, that I needed to go further back and get into jazz. So then inadvertently I got into jazz. I never started playing jazz because I was trying to play jazz. I was doing it so then I could get back to having good chords. But then inadvertently I got into it and, like, kind of went down a whole different route. But yeah, that's kind of the route.
Yeah, I think for most of us it was. Yeah, that kind of time was just, there's a bunch of that kind of music and a couple of others as well. This guy, Royce Wood Jr., whose album came out, I think we heard it before. A lot of other people did, because our mate just sent it to us, which is probably not cool. Yeah.
Sent us unreleased album.
Like, it was like, that's really not cool, but I just lived that record. It was so weird. What,
it was like 2012.
Yeah, and the production was so forward thinking. I was just like, this is insane. I can't believe this. And then I just kind of got lost down that rabbit hole a little bit.
Yeah,
very much worth checking out. He put out an album called Ashen Tang in, like, 5 years ago now.
He's done, like, co-writes of Neo and, like, a few other people. Yeah. He was the guitarist for Jamie Woon as well. He's, like, one of these people that's kind of, like, just, yeah, always alongside other people that are really sick. And then, like, but his own shit is, like,
it's amazing. And
what's the name of this guitarist now?
Royce Wood Jr.
Royce Wood Jr., okay.
Yeah, but yeah, he's so...
Yeah, I got into that. And then the other two guys, Leo's, like... I think he's been just, like, got into this kind of music inadvertently as well. His thing when he was coming up was, like, Pink Floyd and shit, and just, like, learning guitar solos. He's a very vocal player, I'd say, rather than that. But then,
yeah,
we all, like, James, you did a year at music school, and then the rest of us all did three.
But then, like, yeah, I don't feel like
I didn't learn a thing.
Yeah, none of the stuff.
I didn't learn a bit. It's a terrible school to
go. Did you guys go to conservatoires, or was it just normal?
Nah.
We went to BIM.
I think it's probably a bit better now. I don't know.
So, I mean, like, yeah, I'm at the Birmingham one now, but, like, I don't know if you guys had this when you went. You kind of get that mixed bag, right? Like, everyone's there for a different reason. Some people don't know why they're there. Like, and they expect to go there and for the place to make them a better musician.
Yeah, totally.
So they're like, oh shit, like, why am I not learning anything? Why am I, like, not becoming this professional musician that I thought this place was going to make me?
Yeah.
Fucking hell, exactly. Go and practice back at home.
Exactly, man.
Also, I swear, like, so much of the time, like, the standard, and my mind changed now, but the standard when we went was, like, so low that it's just like, there's such a massive gap between, like, the people that are actually good and the, like, just the people that are in the class.
No comment.
No comment.
Where would you say you fit on that, mate?
I can play Smells Like Teen Spirit. I mean, so mostly in time.
So I dropped out of BIM about 3 months ago.
Is it?
And I'm not going to tell you why.
Story for another time, is it?
Well, this is the thing. I was saying to Joe, like, you know, if I ever get obnoxiously rich as, like, a musician somehow, like, win the lottery, I'd be, like, a bit of a dickhead, I'm not gonna lie. I'd want to go into, like, some boutique guitar shop, say Denmark Street, pick up the most expensive shit going, 30-40 grand guitar, play, like, Smells Like Teen Spirit for a good 10-20 minutes, and just fucking buy the shit. Just walk out.
Just play Deep Purple.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's so dope. Speaking of the lottery, my brother got 5 numbers on the lottery yesterday, which I thought was like going to be loads of money. Wow. It's like 5 numbers. That's nuts. That's just nice. One number off getting like, the lottery.
Yeah, that's
not he got 1,500. That's it.
That's but, I mean,
like, still, that's amazing. But like, shit, like, I thought that would be like 100 grand or something.
Yeah, 5
numbers. How far off was he from the other number? Was he like if he picked one number higher?
I don't know, actually. I do not have that information. Damn. But like, you think like, I mean, you'll never, like, if you get 5 numbers once in your life, it's like, that's it. You're not going to get that
you
again.
You might as well stop playing the lottery. Like.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty much it, done. Have you cleared the air with him? You know, if he won the lottery, like, would you get any of it?
Yes, I'm confident that I would. You'd help me out.
By that logic, you should get some of that 1,500 as well.
I probably should, you know. I'll be getting in touch.
What will be the first thing you both do?
If winning the lottery,
yeah, like say Euro Millions, 100 mil. What are you both doing?
You know what? I think like I've talked about this with a couple of people before. You know what? I think the most important thing is like all of the really amazing, sick things that you don't get to get unless you're that rich. You don't really have like the contact to get them. Like, how do you get it? Like, where do you get all of those things? So what you need is like the person that just gets those things to rich people. That's like
sick,
the most important thing.
Who's going to be your yacht guy? Who's
going
to be your luxury car
like,
guy?
Where do you, I don't know where to go for any of that shit. Like, how,
I don't know if I'd want a mansion though. Like, it's too much space, isn't it? Everything's too far apart. You get lost.
Just stay in a one bed. Just
yeah, that's it.
Just get really
I'll just get like a one bed.
Your one bed, yeah. Race car bed.
Yes.
And, like slide.
Just like basically what what's his name in Big? What is that his famous person? Yes.
Did you get Tom Hanks' name?
Yeah, I did. Just get Tom Hanks' room in Big. That's what you want. His flat. get a trampoline.
Yeah, innit.
That's a house right there.
Yeah, you could just get like a one bed flat in like Canary Wharf and just say that you're rich.
That's it.
Empty flat. Yeah.
Just to have it. Yeah, I don't
what
know, man.
Do,
like,
Ian? Yeah, go on.
That would be probably just have to be like buy an island and just like go live in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah, you go do the souped up BIM approach, basically, where you're paying to get for someone to make you a better musician. But, so you put 100 million in, mate, you'll be the best musician in the world, right? By that
true,
logic.
Like by the logic of that. So, or you can just pay someone else to do it and just like be the face.
Yeah, you're like Jacob Collier is the face of Yakul.
Yeah, like, yeah, that's it.
Oh shit, we tried getting Jacob.
No one knows really.
Hopefully, we still get him.
Yeah, we.
Oh
do.
Man, yeah. Have you kind of like gone a wrong too high yet and like not got responses back?
Oh, it's so many.
We've got responses, but we were like, oh shit, all right Joe, let's just not reply because it's just too embarrassing if we reply now.
Is there any ones you can say, or is that not?
yeah if anything, if it gets too bait, we'll cut it out. But
is this the time there that we finally call out Billy Sheehan?
Oh shit, Billy Sheehan as well.
Oh,
yeah,
wow. Basically, so man. My god.
So with Jacob Collier, we got we heard back from his agent in America, and they were like, oh sweet, okay, just give us some more information about this podcast. We were like, yeah here it is. And then they asked for money and we were like, oh shit. No one's ever asked for money yet. So we finessed everyone so far. Including you guys.
Our invoice will be in the email. Yeah.
But we were like, all right Joe, let's just make up a number, 100 quid. And he was just thanks for your time.
No, we were like, what did we say? We said 200 pounds.
Oh, we made up the shit. We were like, oh yeah, we've consulted with our team, and I think we've got a revised budget now. And he says, how much are you offering? And we were like, oh shit, I should have said the number, shouldn't I? I think I went up to like 200 or something. And then he was like, oh, can you give me your like streaming numbers and everything like that? And then I was just like, Joe, if we just go back to him with how many followers we got, they would just laugh at us. Yeah,
no, this was back right at the start before we had like before we got Adam on and Mark.
This is straight after getting Mark Lettieri on.
That's it.
Yeah, it's fucking. But these shows are way more successful than us. I feel bad now. I'm sorry, guys.
You guys are incredible.
Like this.
That's where we are. Yeah, don't put yourself down.
Yeah, man.
We should tell the Billy Sheehan story.
Oh, you go for the Billy Sheehan one.
So we sent out about 150 messages and got one back off Mark Letteri, and we milked that for about 3 weeks. And then we got Ruben James after that. So then we sent out loads more, and Billy replied, and I was really shocked because he's got like 250k on Instagram. And he seemed really down for it. The day was booked and everything. And then he emails us 10 minutes after we started the show saying, I can't do it. It's too complicated. I'm not doing it. Thanks. Bye. And we were like, what?
Oh, wow.
And then so we tried to get back to him and explained how to use the Zoom call. And he was like, sound. Yeah, let's do it again. So we sent him another email and the same day, and then he just aired us and never got back to us.
Oh, wow.
We got ghosted by Billy Sheehan, though, so that's who I can say that.
Cancel Billy Sheehan.
Yeah.
Wow, that's...
It's quite funny that the Scientologist isn't very good at technology.
Well, we were thinking if we were going to ask him about his Scientology beliefs.
I mean, you definitely would have been the whole thing.
This is said with the most love. That basically, the video of him solo, when I was like 16, I was like, that's the coolest shit I've ever seen. I'm going to play exactly like that.
Become a Scientologist just so I can play like that.
It gave me fuel, but that is really funny.
Zoom was one too many steps.
Zenu cannot do Zoom calls. That's how we're gonna get around.
I've said to Joe, like, Joe's like, oh, we should mean, really try and get Billy Sheehan back.
Oh,
I was like, nah, let's blacklist the G. He's done.
Give it a year when you guys are fucking above Joe Rogan on podcasts. He's
yeah. Like, he'll be peeking through his blinds and be like, yo. Nah.
Oh mate, what's...
Let's go back to the music for
a bit.
Yeah. So I'd class you guys as like future soul, something like that. Probably future soul.
Yeah, that's what we say. I mean,
we just rubbed it off Hiatus Coyote because they made it up.
Yeah. I know what you mean.
But, well, like, something else they make up. I mean, so it's hard to do a genre around this world and not have influence from those guys, really.
Yeah, I suppose it helps other people like align to it as well, though, right?
Yeah.
I'm into future soul, and people, what the fuck is that then?
Yeah, totally, man. Like, that's the thing with genre names. As time goes on, they just like divert and just become just more and more like separate and like. But there's just so many subdivisions of genres that it's just.
Yeah,
like it's quite hard to class yourself.
Yeah,
within like one thing.
Mm. What do you think of the 1,500 different genres of metal?
I mean, like we've definitely both got like soft spots for like stuff within that world. Like I used to when I was like 17, 18. That's definitely my vibe.
Yeah.
Postcore, hardcore, something like
yeah.
that.
Yeah,
I just think it's really funny that there are so many, and it's essentially just down-tuned distorted guitars.
Yeah, that's
and geezer shouting really loud, but like,
and people will get so like uppity if you don't even say the right name.
In it. But I think it's quite important that there is like these kind of weird like really defined subcultures, because you don't get it in like many other bits of like pop culture.
Anymore. Yeah,
like it's kind of cool that people can identify behind like I really love like post tech metal or something like that. Yeah, that's sick. Like at least you're really like passionate about that thing, because like you don't really, everything's kind of like available to everyone nowadays. Everyone takes a bit of what they like from everything, and it's kind of nice that there are still people who are just mad for black metal or something like that, like, and just won't listen to anything else. It's just like,
yeah, fair.
So I guess future soul as a genre, what would you say, like, is this a conscious thing you guys do when you put your arrangements and your compositions together, where like what would you say the role is of each instrument that you guys bring forward?
I like that question. That's a good question. It's interesting, like I'd say within this genre, generally, this is definitely something that we do. The keys act as like the more of the harmonic bass, and the guitar is generally like a texture or like a rhythmic element on top of it. It's not always the case. Definitely with like some of the new stuff that we've been doing recently, there's like some more bits where like guitar is like the main. But yeah, I would say that like, well, it starts with keys and vocals. That's like the beginning of every song, really. So that, so yeah, the keys are usually like the harmonic basis, and then the vocals are the main melodic basis. I mean, yeah. What else really?
I mean, we're quite we're a little bit different in that our drummer is so busy all the time. It's kind of like
not in his life.
Not in his life.
Definitely not in his life.
Absolutely not.
Let us be clear.
A man is not busy at all.
He's busy on his sofa.
Yeah. he's such an interesting person.
As a drummer.
Is he like tapping into that fifth dimension right now?
Yeah, isn't it?
He's beyond it.
So there's a lot of space left for him to just play really cool stuff. But like,
yeah, that is very important.
Like a lot of people will have in our genre will have just have the drums kind of sitting back. But like a lot of the time, the bass is doing that, so the drums can just do something mad.
The drums is usually the thing which we get after the keys and the vocals. That's pretty much the general order, like keys, vocals, and then drums, because the drums really dictates like the vibe of what the section, and then everything else. Like if Tom could do get a bass part down, but then the drums might be totally a different vibe.
Exactly, so, and he's got a very different ear for the rest of us for how something should go, and it's 99% of the time it's really sick, so it's like, oh well, what's the point? Like,
yeah. And then from there it's like the guitar is like pretty much always the last thing that goes in, but whenever it goes in, it's like, oh my god, that's like made it so much better. Like there's been so many times where that's happened, especially on the newer stuff we've been doing. It's like we'll have it all down and Leo will be like still kind of working on his parts, and we'll do a session when he's got it all down and it's like, oh my god, this is like a whole new song suddenly, like literally added like the last like 20%, like that just took it to like a whole new level, which is cool. But I would say that's generally the role. And then we really like messing with a lot of synthesis, which like was something we've done from the start. But all the stuff we've been working on at the moment is with the same guy that we did the EP with, Jim McRae, who's Jordan McKay's drummer and producer. So like he is like but he's got like a whole modular setup, and his understanding of all of that is so great. So it's really cool being able to kind of work with somebody that really gets exactly what we're going for on like that detailed synthesis side, because it's like I can do like a degree of like synthesis, and like I'm like a producer and I do all that stuff, but like the level that he takes it to, like
it's really in-depth sound design, which is a totally different skill to songwriting or anything else. Like it's like engineering, it's a completely different thing.
Blows my mind.
It's really interesting. I wish I was better at it.
Yeah, like the level like Amon Tobin, Aphex Twin,
exactly,
all of those
right.
kind
all
of people.
Kind of
that's like, it's, yeah, it's a whole other thing. Like them being like good at writing songs. It's like, yeah, having like such a good understanding of sound and like just engineering and how to like manipulate the sound to do exactly what you want. And like some of the stuff he will come up with, it's like, man, like I don't even know how I would begin to just like make that manually.
Exactly.
Like yeah. it's kind of like the old thing of like a Jackson Pollock or something like that. Like that was a painting that was made in like a second of just like throwing paint against it, and like this sound is something which, I mean, it's slightly different in the sense that he's taken a while creating it, but then it ends up becoming its own thing and kind of like doing stuff that you don't expect it to do. That's what you get with modular stuff, and you end up with this thing where you're like, if I tried to recreate that manually, like that would take so long. And it's the same thing with like if you try to like paint a Jackson Pollock like without throwing paint, if you try to like manually just draw it, like that would take so long. But yeah, I guess it's just there's a certain level of randomness that you get that you would not be able to inject in yourself,
I guess, from a like finding your sound point as well. Then you guys, like something I noticed, it might just be in your 2017 the three track EP put out, the giveaway.
Yes.
Like the bass and that, like the presence is a lot lower compared to what it is now.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's a mixing or if that was like a songwriting thing at the time.
It was.
But is this something that you're continually like experimenting with? Like, all right, let's try and just switch up what everyone's doing.
Yeah, there's a bit of both in that one. That was like our first release. We did that at the studio that I worked at for a while, and we were just throwing shit together, making up as we're going along, really.
Yeah, we didn't even. It was so dumb at that point. It was like we just kind of like recorded it and then didn't even like produce it. It was just like we recorded it and then mixed it. It was like we just missed out the most important step.
Yeah, if we could, honestly, we'd take that down. We don't recognize it all and we don't like it. It's just we Fair. Can't because we put it out on a little label who then subsequently fell out with the guy that funded it, so we can't take it down. that we don't feel that represents us at all, really. We had a different guitar player back then, and it's a different band, really.
Yeah, it's very different.
We should have known better than to put it out like that, really. But we didn't.
Has been learned in 3 years. Exactly, right. It's funny thinking back that was only 3 years ago, and that, like, how different it is, and just how little we kind of understood at that point. But I mean, the thing is, like, people. It? Huh?
Do you still perform it as well?
It's been a while. I did a masterclass at this music school just outside Brighton. Is it start this year or the end of last year? I don't know, like before everything. And at the end of it, I was like asking I was going to like just play some songs. I was asking if there were any songs that people wanted to hear. And someone wanted Out of the Water, which is one of the songs of that release. I guess it's the same thing as if Jordan Mackay did that and you were like, oh, play All Right or play like something from one of his old EPs. Like, it's a difficult one, but like from the point of view of the musician, because it's like, oh, thank you so much, but like, I'm really glad that you've like connected to something that we've released. However, it doesn't really represent us as a band anymore. And I really wish that you'd like, not like that and like the newer stuff. But I mean, you can't choose what people like, and if people still connect with that, then that's great. And for that reason, it'll stay up online, and it's all right. It'll be okay. But yeah, we definitely feel like we've moved past that. I feel like it's a normal thing, though.
Would you say you've got like a certain song that you'd, if someone was to ask, explain Yakul in one song, have you got that song?
Probably like out of the ones that we've released. Blossoming probably is like, it's difficult to say. Like, Blossom is the one that kind of like has all of the things that we do in one song, pretty much. But then it's kind of changing, so I guess it's hard to say.
Yeah, there's a new one we just finished, which is exactly that. Blossoming's it.
I would say that's probably it. Like, we've ended on that song for like since we started playing that song in the set. It's been like the finisher. I guess that probably is like the most Yakul song that we have, which I would guess the meaning, what I mean by that is like the one that's like got the most tropes that we do in songs. I guess that's it. We'll keep like experimenting with different directions. Like, a lot of the newer stuff we've been doing is like a little bit less rowdy, or at least like there's more songs that are a bit straighter and just kind of just don't have weird structures necessarily, or like, I don't know. Yeah, it's a bit of a mix, but we definitely want to maintain that kind of weird stuff, mainly for live. I guess like one of the reasons why maybe we've been going down a direction which hasn't been as like loud and busy is because we haven't been gigging it. So like when you're writing music and then you're gigging it, you're like, you're going to gravitate towards the stuff which is going to be like really fun to play live. But without that, maybe like,
I mean, if you can see on the camera right now, like this room is where we haven't played in like a rehearsal space all year. Like, this is where we've done all of our writing. It's this tiny, it's not a tiny room, it's a small room.
And yeah.
Like, you don't like crank anything in here. You don't like hit the drums super hard or anything.
Yeah.
Kind of, that's had a, it's weird how that has had an effect on the songwriting.
I think that definitely really will be part of it. Really interesting.
I guess if you're constantly evolving, though, it's hard to define you as a band, and you know that's something that's a really positive thing. If every song, you know, has the Yakul sound, but it, you know, it's a different vibe, and that's great. You guys have played some pretty insane gigs. You know, some of the venues you've played at the Jazz Cafe, right? Headlined.
Yeah, we did this Music Soul Child songbook. Which was really cool. We probably did that way too early. we probably would have done that so much better if we got that later. But like, yeah, so that was really cool. We had a really good time. we potentially went down the wrong route when we did the gig. So we'd seen Yusef Days, Charlie Stacey, and Mansell Brown do a Jimi Hendrix song, I had seen that. And they kind of just messed up all the songs. We were like, cool, yeah, let's take all these music soul child songs and just like do whole new arrangement. But I feel like a lot of the people that came just wanted to hear music soul child songs.
Oh, right. And we played. Everything was rehummed and had like very long solo sections.
Yeah.
And, like, I can see what it's just being like.
People did really enjoy it. Also, did. I feel like it was not billed as, so we did two sets. We did one music soul child set, which was the first set, and then we came back and did our set. But I feel like it was not billed as such. So we came back and people are expecting another 45 minutes of music soul child.
Play. Oh, you've conned them.
45 minutes of music they've never heard before. Yeah.
I think people liked our set better than
their
set.
Yeah.
Better than the first set, but
it was
quite funny.
Like, it was sick, like, just to sell out. I mean, we're totally aware of the fact that we did not sell out that gig because people wanted to come and see us. They came because they wanted to see someone do music soul child songs. But the fact that we had that many people there was like, it was amazing, like that early on as well, because that was in 2018.
It was great, and also it was the first time we put our big band together, which was like, has become more of a thing as we've gone along, having like a horn section and proper backing vocal section. It was the first time we've done that, and that was just, we've done that so much since then.
Yeah,
we wouldn't have done it otherwise.
That's a very good point. It was
really formative, but like James said, if we did it now, we'd do such a better job. Yeah. It's the same with anything though, you know, like it's funny how like, it's only 2 years, but in the lifespan of a band, it works together like two or three times a week. That is actually a lot of time.
Yeah. So much like new knowledge that, and like just ability and understanding of that, how things work like over that time. Mm. But yeah, we were lucky enough to do like, we did quite a few shows that year. We'd met the booker of Jazz Cafe, and then he got us on doing New Year's Eve at Jazz Cafe, which is so sick.
That was really,
it was
sick.
Just like this nuts show. Like, who else was on it? Barney Artist was on it, and then a couple other people, I can't remember. But yeah, that was really cool. And then after that, he'd asked us to do the Music Soul Child one. And then we got a couple other supports. Like, we played like Jazz Cafe like four times that year, and we were like, all right, let's chill out on playing Jazz Cafe. We need to stop playing Jazz Cafe. But yeah, it's very cool to play that venue. And then we had, like last year, we did this similar thing with Ronnie Scott's. Because, we did like a few of those, the late night jams at Ronnie's, which is really cool. Really, like, those are really enjoyable. Because we played like the early set at Ronnie's a couple times. And that's still obviously amazing, like playing Ronnie's. But it's quite a weird vibe for us to be like that loud, because it's so intimate. Everyone's just like
eating their dinner
and you're just like, this, it's just really loud, and it's quite like a dead room, like in terms of just like the sound, because it's like a jazz venue. It's not like, it's not the right volume to be playing at in a room like that. So when we did this, the Late Late Show, we like stripped everything back quite a bit and just did a bunch of covers of just like Jordan Mackay, Mac Ayres, D'Angelo, just covers of that kind of stuff.
Being able to improvise in a venue like that as well. Was really sick, like just being like, wow, so I can't believe we're getting to do something like this in a place like this.
It's nice. And it was like so daunting before it, but then it was like really dope, and like everyone was like really hyped afterwards and like got really good feedback. So yeah, we're hoping to maybe, I don't know, before the end of the year, maybe. I know that Ronnie's are doing like live stream gigs at the moment, and Jazz Cafe is starting to do the like socially distant gigs, like maybe from like this week or something.
Yeah, so it's hard to be optimistic about anything, but I mean,
it is.
Like, you know, we'll see.
Yeah, it will be the prospect of actually being able to play in front of people before the end of this year is like so exciting. So we'll see.
Yeah, definitely. I suppose patience is a virtue, right? Like, the longer you wait, hopefully the more rewarding it is.
Yeah, man. Like, as long as it's like next year.
I mean, Tom mentioned it just earlier on about, you know, when you have your full live setup with horns and backing vocals and everything.
Mm.
I mean, like, horns, I suppose, is it's something you can you'll hear quite often within like future solo jazz or anything like that. Is this not something you've like? You don't have like a permanent horns member in the band, do you?
Now we've got like pretty permanent, and like the players we've like been pretty consistent with like who we have for it. But yeah, what's interesting is yeah, like with the EP and like some of the earlier stuff, there was like horns on the actual tracks. But with a lot of the newer stuff, for when we do the big band, I'm just arranging parts for them to play, just following a line that's going to just accentuate and just bring up a chorus or whatever. But yeah, I don't think there's as many, like studio wise, we're not really a horn band. Like there are like horns in every song. That's not like the vibe we're going for really. But yeah, it can be really like really sick for live, just to kind of like hit harder, like certain moments that just need something to like cut through an extra level. And it just gives a bit more like energy on stage, and just means you can like have more people soloing. It just
exactly right.
Just
that's
brings
the thing.
It all up.
Like having cool soloists just ready to go is great. Like
yeah, it's cool. It is stressful. It's very stressful doing the big band, just because like it's hard enough trying to like coordinate four people, but when you're trying to coordinate four other people that like all are session musicians and are going to be busy with other stuff. Obviously not now, but generally, just trying to coordinate that is like it's pretty stressful. But like, it's cool doing it with like people that are our friends. Like it makes it.
Yeah, and I guess I mean when you're allowing more people to solo, it's more enjoyable for the band as well. Everyone on stage, as well as the audience, because I mean people going to your gigs are going to want to hear solos. So
you're so right.
I mean, talking about that subject. Do you guys have any specific influences when it comes to soloing and improvising?
Yeah, man, for sure. I would say for me, it's like the main people that I'll take influence from now, like Rob Araujo and Kiefer, like that kind of area. Man, I haven't been practicing in a while because I've been focusing on writing.
Oh my God.
What else the stuff like? Like Braxton Cook. Like all of that kind of area. Like I really like melodic solos. Like I love like really weird outside stuff, and I've like spent a lot of time transcribing like Herbie solos and just like stuff like that, just stuff that kind of like is a bit more harmonically dense. But I also just love kind of like the way that Tom Misch solos but on keys, like I feel like there's something about being really expressive but just doing something quite simple that's like really powerful. So yeah, like Rob Araujo is like the perfect example of that for me. Like he does stuff that's really outside and weird, but he also just like rinses a pentatonic and it just sounds amazing. He just hits it with exactly the right feel and rhythm, and like yeah, that's like a big influence for me.
Yeah, exactly. Like I love listening to stuff that's really outside, but whenever it comes down to it, I always just try and play really pentatonic, stanky stuff when it comes to actually having some men stretch out. I just like it. Like, it's weird. Like I've been transcribing a lot of lessons this guy Derek Bennett does, and Sheree Reed as well, are both really cool.
Yes.
I love that shit, but then most of the time it's just pentatonic stank. I just like it.
Yeah, it does have that stanky vibe whenever it needs to.
Well, it's nice. I like doing like something really pentatonic and simple, but then just all you need to do is throw in like one little bit, one note,
a bit outside. Like, exactly.
Just gets you.
You had them in the first half, and then bam. Oh,
exactly. It takes this like a whole other place. Like people that start just like everywhere. You're like, where are you gonna go from
exactly,
there?
Exactly. Right. Yeah, like
maybe you can build it up, but like, And like, oh yeah, Corey Henry as well, obviously. But like, everything he does, it's just so like. Sometimes I'll just really get in the zone of being like, I'm gonna transcribe this Corey Henry thing, or like this movement, or this solo, or something. And like, I'll get through an amount of it, and then I'm like, okay, I need to try and like break this down, so I can apply it, because that's like the most important thing.
Exactly.
Yeah. If you can't harmonically like actually have like a theoretical understanding of what's happening harmonically, you can't apply it to your own stuff, because like that's the whole point of transcribing and like taking information is the application of it in your own stuff. You haven't learned it just to be like, look, I learned this Corey Henry thing.
You don't know the harmony, then it's pointless.
It's not
part of your vocabulary. It's just a thing that you did in that one key for that one.
But it's so hard to break it down. Like there's like most keys players, I transcribe the Lingus solo, but not the actual solo. My favorite bit is the bit before he starts soloing, when he's just
The build up,
like the Rhodes bit, when he's just like before he actually starts doing a line, he just starts doing this like this kind of like diminished. It's all like inversions and stuff, but like
I think it's quarter harmony in it. Like it's just stacked fourths.
It's a lot. It's a lot of that, but it's trying to understand like how can I use this in another situation that is not this and make it work. And it's it's quite hard to break, like basically the amount of stuff you need to actually transcribe for a nugget of knowledge that you can then apply. It's like half a bar. You're like, okay, that's it. That's that one thing. That is this week. That's what I'm gonna spend this week on. So otherwise, like you can transcribe like 16 bars, but like there's so much information there. Like you can't apply that all. You're not going to remember it.
It's uncanny that you literally mentioned that, because just before you guys joined the call, I was just saying to Joe, I was like, Joe, I'm having like a midlife crisis right now. I've transcribed all this stuff. And I'm like, I'm going back, I'm like revisiting things. I'm like, oh shit. Like, you know, it's that thing about, you've learned the transcription, but then do you actually know what you've learned from it? Like, and that's exactly what you just mentioned. And I was just like, yeah, Pat Martino, Kurt Rosenwinkel, Spanky Alford, I'm listening to all this stuff and I'm transcribing it, but I'm like, oh shit, like why have I not just gone back and literally done stuff with it?
That's the thing, man, it's so easy to just like keep transcribing, because it's like it's almost
it's fun,
like,
I think it's
fun. And when you get it down, you're like, cool, and it feels like you've kind of got something, but it's like really you need to do, you can do so much less transcribing, or like just less material, and just like work with that before moving on. But like, yeah, it's hard to do, and then it's a lot of it's
patience.
You have to be so patient, because it's just boring, like taking one little bit and then just like applying it in loads of different situations. I think that's why practice is hard. It's just it's boring doing that every day, and just like, I don't know.
Do you ever read Effortless Mastery?
Kenny Werner.
Kenny Werner. Yeah,
I have not read it, but yeah,
it's
really
a good read.
Yeah, man. I didn't actually know it was a book. I thought it was like a documentary type.
He did a TED Talks, I think, but that's like a segment of it.
Yeah. Okay,
The book's good. I just finished it the other day.
I need to do that. Does he have your audiobook a bit more?
Yeah. So like, I think there is actually, because he does like meditation exercises, and I didn't do the audiobooks, to be fair. But he actually recommends using the audio version, so that, you know, he can whisper into your ear and you can enjoy it.
I want Kenny
like ASMR before it was ASMR.
Yeah, that's it. Because this whole thing is like your mindset for like when you're playing, isn't it? Like,
yeah.
Because it's I think there's loads. Like, you know, there'll be a day when you're just like killing every solo. You're like, oh my god, like, why am I I've got this in me to play like this, like why is it not coming out every time? And it's just because like you were in a really good headspace, and the power of the headspace is like mad, but it's just how do you get in that place every single time.
Well, you mentioned it just before that you hadn't practiced in a while, and it's something I was going to bring up, because you put it on your story last night, I think. You ain't practiced in 2 months, but does that not like take you out of the headspace? If I go like a day without practicing, I just get mad anxiety. I'm like, oh shit, where do I go back to on stuff practicing? Like, what do I practice first?
We have been very, very busy with playing and a project, but it's just not been that maintenance that you get done. I get what you mean, exactly what you mean. Like, I was feeling bad about it, and now I just feel like stupid. It's gonna be a slog to actually get back.
It's gonna be long,
but it'll go sometimes. When there's the songwriting and the rest of it that goes along with it, that has to get done.
That's the thing.
There's not enough hours in the day, is the thing. Like,
100%.
The practice is always like a step in order to write better songs. Like, I think like for most of us, probably all of us, it's like, I want to, like, we all want to be better players, but it's like, not just for the sake of being a better player. It's like, I want to be better so I can write better songs. That's like, like, I think the thing that is most important is having a connection between the level of your ability and the level of your songwriting. So like for Stevie Wonder, if he wasn't as good a musician as he is, then he wouldn't be able to write the songs that he writes. So for Stevie Wonder, he needs to be that good to be able to write songs that are that harmonically dense. But for like Bob Dylan, like he doesn't have to be like have like a really good jazz knowledge to write Bob Dylan songs, because they're like quite simple. So as long as there's like a congruency between your ability and your creativity, then I think that's the most important thing to me.
Would you say that's something that, you know, you figure out over time through trial and error, or is it something where, you know, you hit that point of ability? I don't know whether it's chops or theory knowledge. Is it a certain point, or is it through trial and error that you realize that?
I guess trial and error, like, and I mean that point is constantly going to change. If you keep getting better, then you'll apply all of that into the writing. So that it's always a process. But like, I think I definitely remember a point. I mean, I still to a degree, but a few years ago, I wanted to write a certain way, and I just didn't have the understanding to do it. And now I feel like there's quite a good connection between the two. Like I can hear the idea and I get it out.
Yeah.
There's no like messing around like, oh, how do I do that? It's like, I can do it.
That's the key thing, is actually like having the idea in your head and being able to articulate yourself properly and quickly is the goal. I mean, obviously like practicing and learning new vocabulary opens up so many new doors to your songwriting and your playing. But the most important thing, me anyway, it's just to be able to get out what I can hum, you know.
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, have you guys ever had that thing where, I mean, it's similar to what we were just talking about, where transcribing and applying it into your own playing. I know I've had this so many times personally. You find a new artist and you get so invested into them straight away that you check through all their discography and you're learning all their tunes and you're transcribing a song. And you get in the middle of transcribing this big tune, and then you find someone else that you love.
Exactly.
And then you just absolutely abandon it. I can't get out of this mindset.
You're so right. I had so many very ambitious transcription projects at the start of lockdown. I was like, yes, all right. And then they're all half finished in my basement.
Yeah, that's hard, man.
It's tough, man. I know exactly what you're on for me.
See, there's like two ways you can look at it. Like, part of it, it's like, you should always follow your passion, and then if you suddenly got really into that, then that's the thing you should do, because you're going to put loads of effort and time into it. And then the flip side of that is that you should be regimented to the point where you commit to the thing that you started. I don't know what the right answer is, really. It's hard. Like, I did this thing a couple of years ago. I was getting lessons. Maybe it must have been like 3 years ago. I was getting lessons from do you guys know House 3? They're like this they're like our mates in Brighton, but they're like this trio. They're on Deep Matter, label. But yeah, they're so sick. But Ollie Howe, the keys player, I had some lessons with him like a few years ago. It's ridiculous. And one thing he was saying was about just, I mean, this is something that I'd already done a bit, but I was complaining about not being able to like understand something, and he was like, just like go back to the basics, go back to like the 20s and the 30s and just work your way forwards. And I was like, shit, I'm gonna do that. And for like a year, I just slowly worked through each decade, just transcribing the stuff from each decade of jazz, just like going through. And I got up to like the 60s, and then I got really into like Robert Rauho and Kiefer and stuff like that. And I was like, I really just want to play modern stuff. I wanted to like transcribe Glasper solos, and like I just wanted to do like modern stuff. But I committed to like going through all these decades. And there was a point where like mid like 60s, 70s, where I was just like, I'm done. I need to just like go into the modern stuff. And I like bailed on the project, which is like, I think maybe for me, it was the right thing to do, because I wasn't committing to it properly, because I was doing it half-assed. Cause I was like, I feel like you need to be really into what you're transcribing and what you're working on. Otherwise 100%. You're just not going to put the time in, and it's not going to stick in your head. Like, you know, when you're practicing something and you're getting super excited by it, cause you're like, this is sick. And you can actually like physically see like the cogs turning and like see it kind of like falling into place. I think that's like the important thing to get when you're practicing. So yeah, I guess there's no rules for it. Practicing is hard.
Do you ever remember your like your first like your eureka moment, or you know, like the first time the gears started turning? I remember mine, but mine's is quite like cringy.
What was yours?
You know, when you're a teenager. Do you ever hear 3 Days Grace?
I know the band, but I can't think of what.
Yeah, it's just called. Really edgy, like like I want to. I mean, yeah,
yeah.
It's just really edgy, like teenager music from the noughties, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Sick.
And,
yes.
I just had this like really bait, like acoustic riff, and I was like, I gotta learn that. And then as soon as I learned it, I was like, oh shit, I'm a guitarist now.
That was it. Yeah.
I was trying to think
that,
if I got one of those.
You know what? I was talking about this with, I think it was with Leo the other day, about like, I've regularly, especially more recently, had this feeling where I'm like, how did I ever get good at piano? Like,
yeah.
I don't remember, like, because I seem to be like moving forward so incrementally now. Like, but I guess part of it is because I'm quite happy with the level I'm at, so I'm not like pushing myself, but I don't ever remember getting the point where I was like, cool, I can do this now. Because I got back into piano, yeah. It was like 6 years ago or something. And for the first couple of years, I was like, couldn't really do much. And I was just trying to practice like 2-5-1s and the scales and stuff. And I spent so much time drilling 2-5-1s and just movements over that. But I never remember being like, oh, okay, like I've reached the rung or something. I mean, I guess the first point would have been like when I went to a jazz jam and I didn't totally bail on like everything that I was playing, because like the first couple of jazz jams I went to were like so tragic. There was one where I went once and I totally just blew it. It was awful. And then I was chatting to this guy afterwards in the band, and he was like, "Oh, maybe just try blues next time. Like, just keep it simple." So I didn't realize what he meant by that was like do a blues head. Like, so I got up and I called like a B-flat blues, and I hadn't got a tune planned, so I didn't think that was a thing, so I just started soloing off the bat. And there was just like no form, and no one knew what was happening, and then it just randomly ended, and everyone was okay, get this guy out of here.
how do you pick yourself back up after that, though?
It was something that, because I had a couple lessons years ago from Jack Stevenson Oliver from Bell's Trio, and he said, this is actually something that he said, he was like, during the time that he was giving me a couple lessons, he was telling me to go to this jazz jam, and he kept saying this phrase, fuck comfort zones, and it kind of like, I was like just saying that as like a mantra while I was doing all this. So like I'd kind of set myself a precedent that every Monday, when the jazz jam was, every Monday evening I was going to go to that jazz jam with a new tune, and I was going to play that tune until I was not shit at it. And I just did it every week until I was like, not like, until I didn't suck, and I kind of was okay. And then, yeah, I did it for like a year. I went like every week. And that was probably the thing which made the most difference to my playing. Like, just having to like go that consistently and know that if I hadn't practiced that I'd like just like feel really embarrassed, and it would just be like a really horrible experience. I guess I get part of the reason why it wasn't totally just destroying my whole confidence was I knew I wasn't just a piano player, so like if it was the only thing I was doing, I'd be like, oh, why am I even doing this, what have I done? But like, because I knew I was producing, I was writing, I could sing, like, I was doing other things, it was like, this isn't the only thing I do, so like don't have to feel like, yeah.
I mean, was it one of these like super late night jazz sessions that happen every week?
Nah, it was not a cool. It was like, it was populated mainly by old people, so it was perfect because like, it was not like a cool. If I was in London, I'd probably be a lot better than I am now because I'd have been roasted so hard.
Yeah, I know what you mean. We have the Birmingham Conservatoire just up the road from BIM. I've only moved to London a few days ago, so I was still called Birmingham home. but it's so intimidating playing there because it's not there's old people obviously, but it's also like the most hip young jazz guitarists and jazz keyboard players and jazz drummers and jazz bassists.
Stressful, man.
It's so stressful. How do you get past like the initial fear of getting up?
Just get up.
You gotta do it in the words of Shia LaBeouf.
Just do it.
One thing, if you put your, like, one thing that like, I'd always do with this one is I put my name down at the start. So then, like, you have to do it then. Like, even if everyone else is good. But the thing is that, like, even if it's as bad as you think it's going to be, like, or the only thing that's going to make it really shit is if you then stop. Like, if you keep going every week, it's going to get better and better until the point where you're like, oh, I kind of understand it now. Yeah, like, you're not going to be able to, like, learn how to play with people in that setting, or like how to end a tune, taking cues from people, like, without like being in that environment. It would be like trying to be like a boxer without ever like sparring with anybody.
I guess, I mean, I personally came from a rock background and metal background, and it's only been in the last like 3-4 years or so that I've started exploring jazz. So, like, I mean, I was a massive Avenged Sevenfold fan, to the point I learned all that stuff. I got super good at shredding and sweet picking. That was like my forte in college. I was the guy. And then, like, you learn this new language and it's like, holy shit, what am I doing?
Yeah. I mean, like, that's definitely good for like agility and stuff, like all of that stuff. But yeah, it's a whole other thing when you're like, the framework is kind of empty and you're just like, oh, okay, I just need to like just do this on the spot. But yeah, it's just something that the only way to do it is by just doing it.
I wish it was easier than that.
I had this one, I hadn't played at a jazz jam in like ages. I mean, I'd like improvised on gigs and I'd gone to random jams, some, but not like straight ahead jazz. I was in Paris at the start of the year, and we're in this like weird little cave jazz jam session. It was really sick. And everyone was so dope. And like, I kept trying to like get someone's attention to like be like, oh, can I get up? Finally managed to. And they're like, yeah, cool. And then like a couple songs later, they call me up. And as I get up, the drummer's like, oh, cool, I'm going for a cigarette. I'm like, oh, can we like wait a couple? Because I really want to play with the drummer. And they're like, no, let's just go. I mean, it's just better. Like, yeah, you got a bass player, but like, I want to play with a drummer. Like, can someone else? And I just do it without a drummer. It's really dead.
what song did you choose?
There Will Never Be Another You. That's like one that had down. Like, that's one of the ones I kind of like, was most comfortable with.
Yeah.
But like, yeah. Oh, the solo, it was okay, but it did not feel very comfortable. Like, that was kind of the start of this year. After doing that, it kind of spurred me to be like, I'm going to get back on jazz again. And like, because I hadn't learned any straight ahead tunes in ages, because it was like, I was learning all these tunes and I was like, huh, I'm not doing any straight ahead gigs. So like, they're just going out of my head like after a couple of months. And like, I do love it when people put bebop language in like modern stuff, like little like flurries and stuff. But on the whole, like, some of it can sound a bit dated if you do it. Like, so I wasn't like trying to like learn that stuff as much anymore, but yeah, I think I might go back and like do more research. I think that might be the time now to go back to the past. I need to do something. how much do you guys practice on the whole?
I've been trying to make the most of it, but like, it's like since like quarantine, all that shit went down. I was just like, oh, I'm gonna practice every day, and fucking Call of Duty Warzone come out, didn't it?
We all got PlayStations for lockdown.
I've staved like away from PlayStations for like so many years because I know that I get so into games, and then lockdown, it's like this is happening, and now it's the best thing.
Yeah, we spoke with Adam nearly about it, and he called it collective burnout, where it's, you know, everyone has this new out of the blue 6 months of time to shed the instrument and get as good as possible, and then it comes to it and it's like, oh, so demotivating, you know.
Collective burnout, I like that. Yeah,
it's like we're all on the same page here.
Yeah, man,
I started off with the best intentions.
Oh, 100%, yeah.
Yeah, we started writing a lot and it kind of took up a lot of energy. And I was like, okay,
it's more fun.
It's more fun. We were producing stuff that will have a use in the future rather than me just fucking banging my head against the wall in my basement and telling me to shut up. That was the other thing. My girlfriend's working upstairs, like, making money, and I'm what I'm like now because the world has ended for me. She's upstairs being a real human being, and if I don't have my headphones, she's like, "We shut the fuck up." I'm paying the rent up here, so can you shut up.
Like? Keep transcribing your solos. Yeah. Pay the bills
learn
with that.
Your silly songs.
It's, yeah, we get so wrapped up in you know the importance of music and jazz standards and transcribing, and to everyone else it's like, what are you doing, mate?
Yeah, what are you doing with your life? Yeah, I've heard that too many times.
Oh yeah. God, Blink, when you like look at like how much money you brought in the last month or last 6 months, it's like, maybe I should have done a real job in this.
No, trust. I did it the other way around. I did a real job, and then I was like, "Screw this."
Yeah, man. Fuck 9 to 5s. I've never done a 9 to 5 ever.
Oh, lucky. I'm actually quite jealous, but I mean, you guys did the isolation tapes, right? Which was man. Like, there was a nice little mixtape almost with. It just felt like. I mean, I mean this in the nicest way. It's like you didn't overthink anything. Like everything just came out, and it was just short little ideas.
It was literally
all of those ones were just jams as well, pretty much.
Like, they all came together in the space of a couple weeks. It was just
we've been writing solidly until like 2 weeks ago, pretty much.
Yeah.
Like it's been a constant like effort to create new music, and that was just extra stuff that came out of that.
Yeah, it was just little jams. We're like, hey,
really pretty busy. Like we recorded it on like a dodgy pack of drum microphones. So you can see our little setup there.
This, we've got actually, wait, I can probably turn the screen. We've got this mic stand bolted to the ceiling.
You might as well just tape it as well.
Isn't it, man? It's so sick. So, like, literally, we've just got drum mics, like, permanently wired in.
Yeah,
so
I mean, they don't sound hi-fi at all, but it gives it a vibe. And, they sound pretty good. But, like, just having that there just means we can actually, like, write constantly. And, like, whenever an idea comes in, it's like, oh right, that's it. It's being recorded right now, which I can't tell you how much difference that makes.
I guess we'd like trying to get new ideas down. The most important thing is just making everything really streamlined and just having the drum mics there. So it's like we got the idea and we're like, cool, record.
Get the line in the bottle straight away. It really is.
Really, it's really like sped up the process. So having this space over lockdown has been. So lucky,
isn't it? Like so many bands just couldn't do anything because they couldn't meet up or like wasn't safe. Like,
rehearsal spaces
were closed, and like as soon as it was safe to do it, we were straight down here like 2 or 3 times a week.
Doing stuff, which has been
incredible. So that was helpful, and that little mixtape was just from that. It was really fun just doing it. Less fun was having to record it all in our basements, not all like our bedrooms and stuff when it was done to try and make it look good.
Yeah.
We got our good mate Sam, who does all of our video stuff, to like, he gave us these instructions like, oh yeah, make sure there's like a light source behind you as well as the ring light on your face. And so then Leo, our guitar player, who's an idiot, he just got all the brightest lights and stuck it behind him so you couldn't see what he was doing on the screen.
Like a ghost playing guitar.
He was just like super dark.
He's
like,
oh, no.
What have you done? Did you think it looked good when you recorded it? Like, what's wrong with you?
I want to make that as our background now so everyone can see it.
Oh, mate.
Are you doing that on Zoom?
Yeah. Can we do that?
We'd have to get a screen.
This will go on YouTube as well, so.
Oh, that's it. Okay, we're doing it. Now I really feel like we're like Joe Rogan or something. Get that up, Jamie.
Well, have you guys checked out the latest Joe Rogan episodes in the new studio?
No.
I haven't seen any of the new ones yet, no.
The last one we listened to was a new Bill Burr one.
We listened to a Bill Burr one on the way back from the studio.
Like, but now...
How is it now? Has he changed it up?
Yeah, I'm not sure about the new studio. It kind of seems like a bit of it's like almost like a gaming setup as opposed to the really cool old really hip studio. And now it's like neon lights.
Oh no! It definitely had a vibe, didn't it? Before?
It had such a vibe. Yeah.
Neon lights.
It's got like bright red neon lights, and it looks so small.
Really? You thought they would be? He'd gone the other way. That's strange.
Yeah.
How weird.
Okay, I've got the screenshot.
He's got the screenshot.
How do we do it?
Oh, you want a screenshot? Yeah. Let me.
Like,
I think I can.
I think we can. I think we're just gonna.
Oh, Joe, your host.
Yeah, okay.
Well, yeah, choose virtual background.
Then. Oh, you did virtual background, sweet.
Yeah. you go cooking the plus thing. I used to do this all the time, but I haven't done it in a while. There it is. Is that
over
the top? I don't know.
No.
No? <It's
not. laughs>
What? There you go.
Wait, there we go. Yeah.
Is that gonna work?
Oh, oh,
yeah. What was he thinking? Mug.
Oh jeez.
Oh god, that's hilarious.
You'll have to give the at another. We'll just clip it and at him on it.
When
we do some highlights.
I love virtual backgrounds, man.
That's, yeah, that is that is pretty cool.
Oh jeez. I'm guessing I don't remember seeing that video.
We did like I think like that was the initial reason we did it all was because we were like we need to like do some just like content of like
active,
like video
yeah.
like live video type things. So we had that idea and we were like oh we could just do kind of like a few little jams and. Just like yeah, film them all separately, and then we're like, oh, we might as well just like release it like we like just on Bandcamp, just do a little thing like that.
Yeah.
But I mean, yeah, the videos like Sam did it. Sam did a great job, but like we did not do an amazing job with
that. That's the thing about being a musician nowadays is you can't just actually play your instrument or write the songs. You've also got to be like a social media manager and video editor and a graphic designer and everything else.
And like a fashion designer.
Eventually, that's... you're going to be shit at something. And that turns out that we're not very good at recording. filming things.
Yeah, it's mad how much that's changed. Like. From like 20 years ago or something.
Yeah, man.
Like,
yeah, how much one person can sort of do as well within the band.
Exactly.
Or like,
right?
You know, yeah.
Yeah, it's.
I mean, it all went to a good cause, right? I think it was all for charity.
Yeah, man, we did it all to the NAACP and Black Lives Matter.
Ah, sweet.
Yeah, so,
we raised a good amount of money. I was pleased with that. It was
yeah, man.
Good to do something when everything seemed to be setting on fire. And...
Yeah. Yeah, it was, yeah. I mean, it was dropping the water completely.
Oh,
like,
yeah. Good to make a gesture like that.
But it's a lot more than just a black square, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Which is the biggest load of bollocks I've seen.
Yeah, man. It was good, that one. Yeah, it's nuts. It's been, it's been interesting seeing because there have been like every month there's been marches still in Brighton.
Yeah,
That happening, and I'm assuming they're happening in other places too.
They're still happening, yeah.
But it's been, it's been kind of sad. Like, The last one that was, I don't know, every time since the first proper one, it's just got smaller and like the vibes kind of changed a bit. And the last one I went to, I was there like, just felt like so helpless. It's like, how, like, I don't see like how this is going to like change anything anymore. Cause it's just, it feels like every month it's going to happen and it's going to get a little bit smaller and people are going to be a little bit less passionate. Exactly, yeah. And then there's going to be a point where it just fizzles out. It's like, fuck, that's all the things that everyone was saying at the time that it was just going to be like this trend and it's going to just die. And everyone was like, no, this is it, this is the movement. And like, for at least like the people lucky enough to be able to just like not have it have like a thing for their life on a daily basis, it's just fizzling away, which is like, it's really difficult to know like how to stop that from happening on like on a scale that's large enough that's actually gonna make a difference. It's difficult, but yeah, it was nice to
do something at least, you know.
Yeah absolutely,
yeah, definitely. And I think you did it in the form of some like great mixtapes as well.
Thank you, man.
That's spot on. I mean, we're sort of coming towards the end now, but I suppose we'll ask you a few more questions about the band or the band dynamic.
Yeah, man.
Like, you guys are all fucking sick at your instruments in your band, right?
Thank you, mate.
how do you manage musicians' egos within that though? Because everyone's like, oh no, I can play so much more notes in this phrase here. Just just Tom, just shut the fuck up. Let me do my bits. Is that how it goes?
I mean, we're all quite self-deprecating, really. Like,
yeah, that is actually right. Definitely to our benefit, is that everyone's kind of like, oh, that sounds fucking shit. Take my bit out, like, do that bit.
Yeah, Leo, every time he does a solo, pretty much, shit. It's like, no, mate, it was a really great solo.
Yeah,
I think, and everyone's much more interested in the song than having their bit to solo over.
Yeah, that is true. That is very true. Like,
I mean, sure, it's nice and it's fun, but, like, it is secondary to the song. And also, like, yeah, maybe when we started, we were a bit more interested in, like, crowbarring and, like, more, like, mad time signatures or something like that. But now it's just, like, I think we enjoy, like, playing, like, a pretty laid-back chorus that's sick rather than, like, tearing.
Man, yeah. Like do it for the best of the song rather than...
I think our favourite song to play for ages was this ballad that we did last year. Like, it's just really nice to, like, just have, like, cross stick snare, like really delicate everything, and just like
four chord
song. It was sick. I loved it.
Yeah,
yeah, man. There's something, I don't know. There's something satisfying about something simple that's just really good. And I really like ballads generally, just because you can't have. I mean, you can have a bad ballad, but you can't have, like, if you have a song which is just the chords and the vocals, then the melody has to be so strong to carry the song, because there's nothing else going on. I think that's the sentiment of why I like ballads, because they're really simple and you can't cover up. Like, I think when you have, like, a loud song with loads of stuff going on, there's more of a chance that you're covering up a bad song, just because, like, if you strip it back, you'll see, like, if you can play the chords and sing it and it's still a good song, then it's a good song. But I think that's the most important thing for us. Like, there's got to be a good song behind everything else, even if it's really hectic. So,
do you guys ever find it hard to, you know, prioritize someone's parts if you've written a song, and then I'd imagine you all come together and contribute. Does it ever get difficult, you know, if someone's written a part that they're really passionate about and everyone else thinks it's dog shit?
Weirdly, that hasn't actually happened that much, but, like, occasionally, I mean, on the whole, we're somehow, like, pretty much on the same page with stuff.
Yeah,
like,
it's rare that happens. And if there is, like, a bit, like, we were editing a new song we did the other day, like, a lot of the time it's quite obvious the bit that should stay in and the bit that should come out.
We've been putting loads of stuff into these, like, new things we've been working on. And there's been loads of points where we've been like, that's too much stuff, take it out. And, like, everyone's kind of in an agreement with, like, that's messy now. You're, like, distracting away from, like, the core of the song. Mm. I'm sure that it's not always going to be that way, but it's quite surprising.
I'd
say that the closest thing will be, like, Sam, like, changes his parts just randomly quite a lot.
That's annoying.
There's been a lot of times where we've, like, done a pre-production and we've had a part which everyone was following in a certain way, and then we'll record it and be like, nah, that was shit, we're doing it this way now. No.
Sam's your drummer, right?
Yeah.
I one of our new songs where I followed all the pushes on the solo I was doing, and then we were tracking it, and then he was like, no, I don't want to do that shit. And I've been like, brother, I wrote that solo for like 3 days. 3 days of my life. And he's like, no, I'm not doing it anymore. I'm like, ooh, okay, bro.
We'll just rewrite. But I mean, like, that's pretty much the...
Yeah, that's about the worst as it's got, to be honest. Pretty blessed in that respect, I guess. Like, I've been in bands before where people, like, it's been like full, like, shouting arguments about how things should have gone down. I think that's, like, after doing, like, because this isn't any of our first band by any stretch, we've all, like, been playing in different guises in music for years, like, learning how to, like, navigate your way diplomatically through these things is the most important thing,
man. It's like a relationship. Like, the first relationship you have, you make a lot of mistakes. And you've got to learn from those mistakes. And then the next one, hopefully, you'll make less mistakes. It's the same with the band.
Yeah.
What about on a lyrical level? I think this is one thing that stands out with you guys compared to a lot of, I don't want to say competition, a lot of, like, similar artists, you know, is, like, lyrically you're quite present. The melodies the melody's still intact when even when you're doing it. Is this like a poetry, like a thing one of you guys do, whoever writes the lyrics?
All James.
I like with the more like recent stuff, I've been thinking about it more. Lyrics, I find lyrics the hardest, you know, like that. I spend, like, sometimes they come up really easy and sometimes they don't, but generally I've been thinking quite a lot about this because the way that I usually tend to write lyrics, I know a lot of people say that, like, oh, you want to have like what you're writing about and then before you write about it, but a lot of the time I'll kind of just let stuff come out and then figure it out afterwards. And I think I've kind of broken it down to be like, you know, like when you have a dream, like, you don't always know exactly where that came from, but it came from somewhere in your subconscious. It came from somewhere.
Yeah.
And a lot of the times with lyrics, I would be like, I'll look back at ones that I wrote and I'd be like, I've no idea like where that came from, but it came, like, it wasn't like I had like a thought out idea of what that was going to be. It kind of just flowed out. I mean, that's like maybe half the time, and then the other half of the time, or there'll be a specific thing. I mean, in some respects, it is easier writing something when you like have a specific idea that you're writing about, or like a situation or whatever. But it kind of depends. I have actually, like over lockdown, I've been trying to get into like reading poetry and just have a better understanding of that stuff, just because I guess like lyrics for me are harder because with the music, it's always a bit more of there's always like a bit more of a vague mystique about what the meaning is with music. With lyrics, it's like words. So like, it's a bit more, suddenly you like, there's got to be a bit more specificity, like on the whole. So yeah, it's easy to kind of like write music without being like, what's this about? It's just, you're just expressing yourself through the medium of your instrument. But then with lyrics, it's like, I'm expressing myself through the medium of words, which means like, I have to kind of like, have a better idea of what I'm trying to say, which suddenly becomes like a bit trickier, especially if like you don't find it easy to articulate what like your emotions or something like that. So it can be very therapeutic getting stuff out there, definitely.
No, that's sweet. I mean, I've tried reading some poetry. I've got like a Leonard Cohen book, Stranger Music. But I can't make sense of it. Like, I'm just really shit with poetry, and I so reading it, I'm like, oh, that's a pretty cool way of saying that.
I feel you. I think like you gotta find the right poet. I'm still like, the first one I got this Sylvia Plath book, and like her poetry is like so nuts. I read like half the book, and I was like, I don't know what a single one of these poems is about. Had to like listen to a podcast just like breaking it down, and even then they were like, that was a pretty big reach, bro. Like, really? That's what it meant? So I feel like, I need to find like the right poet. I want somebody that just has a really like poetic way of saying things that just like makes sense when you read it. You're like, I know exactly what he's talking about. That was like such an amazing way of saying that, though. Rather than like, what does that mean? What is that metaphor? Like, that's not, I'm not trying to write like really like weird metaphoric lyrics that kind of like are so dense that like there's loads of meanings.
I suppose we'll start wrapping things up now, but this project Yakul, is it like a full-time project for everyone, or is it like a part-time thing and you guys are like teaching or
no one else does like another band?
I mean, in terms of a creative project, this is it. Like, but like, there is not enough money in it for it to be our living. Times is hard out there right now. Like, I'm having to move home for a couple months until I can get a spot with my girlfriend again because I'm broke. And then the other two boys kind of just, Leo's just had to get a coffee job again.
Before lockdown,
we were all like full time, like, doing session work and teaching and stuff, but then now it's just,
so you guys doing to like plug it, I guess, are you guys doing remote teaching?
I have been teaching for years. I've now stopped teaching. At the start of lockdown, I was like, I hate teaching, I'm done with teaching. So I'm like, I'm just producing now.
Sweet.
So
but the rest of us three would love more students for sure. So,
yeah.
Line.
No, yeah.
Woo!
We'll drop a. We'll make sure we mention that as well. Lessons available.
Appreciate
it. On bass guitar and drums, right?
Yeah. And if you want to plug, you can plug anybody that needs a producer. I'll maybe do it if I like it.
James is your man. If you're in a prick, he'll sort you out. That's his motto. It's like a Better Call Saul, isn't it?
That's it.
It's inspired. Like, what's the next few months looking like for you guys, release wise? You're recording new music. We're gonna hear it anytime soon.
So we are actually, there will be something else before the end of the year. We've kind of had like a shift of plan a little bit. So, we'll be releasing something else before the end of the year, like a little small project, and then all the stuff we've been writing over lockdown, that'll be like a next year thing, but.
Sweet.
Yeah, we're gonna try.
So
and
you're sorted for like 2021 lockdown now.
Yeah, man.
We're ready now.
We're ready now. As long as we can fucking play shows, like exactly. We pushed everything back because we were like, I don't think we're gonna be able to do a tour in March. I feel like that may not be possible. So, we pushed everything back. So hopefully, we'll be able to tour it. Otherwise, maybe it won't go very well.
Otherwise, it's gonna be a less successful release.
Got a lot of stuff.
I'm sure it'll work out like perfectly.
Hopefully, man. Hopefully.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But no, thanks for hopping on.
Thank you so much for having me.
Forward to seeing you live. Like, if you do end up coming to Birmingham in a couple of weeks, whatever happens, I will definitely 100% be there. It's around the corner from me, so.
Oh, safe.
Oh, sick, man.
I'll see you guys there if that's the case.
Yeah.
But
good luck with everything in the future, guys. Hopefully, if you know, we can have you on again sometime in the future if you'd be down for that.
Yeah, man, absolutely. Yeah, that's sick.
See if we can get awesome. The other boys out of it.
The other boys can do it next time. Yeah. It'll be a much more subdued conversation.
Guys, so if you enjoyed this episode, please like and follow us on Instagram and Spotify and YouTube and everything, and check Yakal out, of course. Thank you guys for joining us. We'll see
you
next time.
Thank you for having us.